Chapter 4. The Khan.
The Khan received me on the small bed in his huge private bedroom with its thick carpets. There was no conversation. There was only one purpose to my visit. There was only him and my body. So this was it, now. This was what I had learned for. Soon he was breathing heavily, while I was silently debating my guilt. I had read all the stories about the brave maiden slayers of strong and powerful men. Ravishers, conquerors, oppressors, cunningly seduced to drink themselves into unconscious sleep, or poisoned by drugs hidden in golden amulets, their eyeballs pierced with swiftly wielded hairpins, their hearts stabbed with slim daggers cleverly hidden in the folds of silken underwear. I knew all those tales. I knew the names of all those dauntless damsels. And from the moment I first heard about their deeds, I had despised their perfidious, furtive duplicities. I was not like them. I would not be like them. The Khan was wide awake, hardly weakened by the short act in which he had taken sexual possession of his new bride. Not inebriated by drink, fatigue, or drugs. Not distracted by any wiles of what sexual allure I might be able to muster. He was firmly standing on his feet, and his hands were free when I said to him, "I will kill you now." Only after I had said it, I realized, with horror, that I had already failed. I realized that here was a man, a seasoned warrior, brawny and tall, hardly past the prime of his years, and confronting him was a slim girl less than half his age and half his weight, naked, unarmed, his sperm slowly dripping down her thighs. But it was too late. There was no way out. I could not take back what I had said. I could not turn it into a joke, for he was not a man to be joked with. I could not escape. He raised his arm, not to fight me, this would have seemed a ridiculous idea to him, but to punish me. And this punishment, I knew, after having knocked me down and handed me over to the guards, would make the death of the girl on the ship seem merciful and quick. "I am sorry," I said, more to myself than to him, for he could not possibly understand what I was sorry for. And I was sorry for myself, after all, more than for him. As a mental exercise, I went through the five paths, focused my mind, took control over my body, took in my surroundings, read my opponent's intents, deliberated my movements of evasion and attack. But he, of course, was already lying dead at my feet. His windpipe crushed, his neck broken, his head twisted at a hideous angle. I had not been better than them, after all. It had not been a fair fight. I had not been able to give him a fair warning. I stepped back, away from him, until my back was against the wall, opposite the small door, and tried to understand, why had I killed him, and since when I had known that I would. He had been the Khan since before I had been born. I knew, as everyone knew, that thousands had perished in his dungeons, and hundreds of thousands had perished in his wars, bled to death on the battlefields, burned to death in the conquered villages and towns, died screaming at the hands of his marauding, pillaging, raping, murderous troops, or starved to death next to their scorched and blood-drenched former fields. I knew this, but who had made me his judge? Who had made me his victim's avenger? I was none of this, nor would I have wanted to be. He had bought me, he had raped me, but I had been offered to him. He had only taken what he had deemed rightfully his. For this, too, I felt no desire to be his judge. He might have killed me eventually, but for the time being I had not been in danger of my life. I had not been, but now I was the slayer of the Khan, with nothing to speak in my favor, and no possible way of escape. So why had I killed him, and myself in the process? I found no answer, but I saw her before me, the base silent girl, with no hair, no arms, no orifices, her huge dark eyes looking into mine, shining crystal eyes. I stood still as she had sat, and waited. I had no sense of time, but I think I did not have to wait long. Something must have told them that something was not right. The door opened, four guards entered, immediately followed by the Khan's daughter. Huge men with keen eyes and bulging muscles, dressed in black leather fighting gear, short swords in hand, elite fighters, professionals, highly disciplined, well-trained. One of them, their captain. They were members of the Khan's personal bodyguard. Their task was to protect the Khan and to carry out his orders. The Khan was dead, beyond protection, beyond giving orders. Others might have thrust themselves at me, the Khan's obvious assassin, knocked me down, broken my arms, or killed me on the spot. They, taking in the situation, seeing that I was naked, unarmed, posing no danger they couldn't handle, froze. The Khan's daughter took a few steps to the side, away from them, and in the huge room she easily stayed some 20 feet away both from her dead father and from me. She was clad in a simple, flowing, high-necked dress of white silk with a wide belt of black leather with large silver applications. I had seen pictures of her, and I had recognized her immediately. She was older than I was, taller than I was. Her breasts were fuller than mine, her skin was smoother, her hair was longer, darker and shinier. Her stance was more graceful, her lips were redder, her face was beautiful and serene. As we all stood immobile, my father entered the room. He had been told, he had run from where he had been. He gave me a short glance, then passed the guards, hurried over to where the Khan lay dead, bent down to him, rose up again, gave me another short look of horror, disbelief, disgust and scorn, then turned to the Khan's daughter and said, "What an awful tragedy! What a horrible crime! Do what needs to be done." It was my death sentence. But what might he have possibly done to save me, even if he had wanted to? Slowly, gracefully, she moved. Her left hand went down to her belt, touched one of the silver applications, and I saw that they were not applications at all, but knives. Silver throwing knives. She looked at me, and her arm came up, blade in her hand. I closed my eyes. I did not want to see my death. There was a swift rustling of silk as she threw, then a strange wheezing sound, then a dull sound as from a fall. I opened my eyes again. The guards had not moved. The Khan's daughter stood where she had stood. My father lay next to the Khan, the knife in his throat, his blood spurting out, drenching the carpet. Then again a slow movement. The captain of the guards, facing the Khan's daughter, sank to his knees. "My queen," he said. She had nodded her head, acknowledged their pledge of allegiance, then sent them out of the room. Now she took another knife from her belt, then opened the belt and let it drop to the floor. When she raised the arm with the knife, again the left one, her throwing arm, I thought of closing my eyes again, but I kept them open. She did not throw the knife. She held it against her throat, touched the neckline of her dress, then cut through it, cut down all the way until the dress fell apart. and with an almost imperceptible twist of her body, she let it slide off her shoulders. She was naked underneath. The knife, pointed and double-edged, had left a softly bleeding red line on her body, from her neck to her crotch. The knife still in her hand, she walked over to me. While she looked into my eyes, the tip of her knife touched my throat, broke the skin, then went down. Between my breasts, across my belly and belly button. Down, down. Drawing a bleeding red line on my own body just like hers. At first I did not dare to breathe, then my breathing became heavier. With a flick of her wrist she disposed of the knife, then she took hold of my hand, drew me down. On the soft thick carpet, watched by the dead Khan and my dead father, covered in each other's blood, we made love.